You listen to the Jason Greger Show podcast brought to you by Lakewood Chev. The Chevrolet Cruze price reduction's on right now up to $3,250. You can get leasing from only $55 bi-weekly. Dare to compare the Cruze LT versus the Civic LX or the Focus SE. Trust me, you'll pick the Cruze only at Lakewood Chev. Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us once again. Kevin, lots to get to, so let's fire right into it. The goalie interference reviews, they're now going to be centralized, shall we call it. Do you think it solves anything?
I think you have the potential for more consistency in the calls, but I don't really think it's going to solve much because you're now handing them over to a group that is even more closely aligned with, basically with the league in terms of The mandate got changed in very rough terms right around the All-Star game when Gary Bettman said it was being interpreted too closely. The problem is that's the rule. And so it's got some interpretation to it. I always said that if it was going to be called in black and white terms, you were just going to lose too many goals. And sure enough, when that happened, they loosened it. They made more gray areas. And now you've got a group that's probably going to look for gray areas that allow goals, and that's fine. We want scoring. But I don't think you've solved the problem in terms of contact, in terms of the risks to goaltenders with concussions, in terms of the behavior. And I've talked about this before. You want to take away the problem, change the behavior, call goalie interference penalties for contact in the crease, for dangerous contact in the crease. I think what you're going to have more than anything is you're not going to see any of that. Goalies will be totally unprotected, and they'll just leave it to the governing bodies overseeing it from the war room to make decisions on goals or not. And you'll see more contact with goaltenders. You'll probably see more concussions in a year where we've already seen more goalies concussed than at any time before. So, no, I really don't think they've solved anything here. I think the best you can hope for, and I guess this is a positive in terms of the confusion that surrounded the calls, is more consistency. And I'm pretty sure that's going to be more consistency in terms of goals being allowed to stand. But I don't think it solves the problem in terms of the rule actually being interpreted properly. And I really don't think it solves the problem long-term in terms of, hey, how do we find a way to keep goalies safe and still allow goals that should count to count? I think, if anything, you're going to encourage more contact in the long term with a group that right now is probably as vulnerable as they've ever been.
Lots to discuss when it comes to goalie interference. And, some wonder about the safety of the goalies. But really, the safety of the goalies, Kevin, I'd say, is more the pucks to their mask right now than his headshots.
Yeah, this is another one. And this one is slippery slope here. And, it's interesting. I've talked to people around the league about this. And what we're seeing right now is concussions. And they're sort of related in a lot of cases. Because for a lot of these goaltenders, it starts with a collision-based concussion. My guess is in some cases, and in some cases I'm more certain than guessing because I've talked to the goalies, a lack of treatment. A return to play when they're feeling better, but not necessarily treated and are better. So in other words, they've just adjusted to sort of a new normal in terms of how they're feeling rather than actually resetting with some proper treatment and now more vulnerable to impacts off the mask. At the end of the day, no, we've never seen goaltenders concussed from straight shots like we've seen this year. And the question is starting to be asked, it's kind of like, it reminds me of Major League Baseball a little bit, Jason. What would happen, like, why does Major League Baseball, which loves offense and loves home runs, why would they never go to aluminum bats? Because it was a player safety issue at that level with the speed of the ball coming off the bat. You probably would have gotten somebody killed on the pitcher's mound with a comeback. And we've had so many close calls as is in terms of just violent impact. We're starting to approach possibly, and again, this theory is starting to be out there more and more among some of the manufacturers. Are we approaching a point where it's getting hard to protect the goaltender's head from shot impact? We've talked a lot about reining in goaltender's equipment, but the sort of stick technology and the ability for everyone to sort of let go rockets and, you know, sort of perfect that release and just optimize velocity off the blade has never been better. And it's completely, there's no regulator on it. The league's never looked at any of that technology and never even thought about, you know, do we have to rein this in? I would suggest if this trend continues in terms of goaltenders being concussed by shots, that's a conversation they might have to have in the next couple of years, because it seems like it's getting, yeah, maybe not impossible, but a lot harder and maybe close to impossible to keep these guys safe, both in terms of practices and friendly fire ending games with shots off the mask. And, you know, talking to some of the people involved in this, the only thing that's really changing right now from, say, the past couple of years to now when this has become a real problem is shot velocity. The technology in the mask hasn't changed. If anything, the foams are getting better, but the stick technology continues to get better, and maybe it's outpaced our ability to keep these guys safe in the crease.
Kevin Woodley from Ingo Magazine, NHL.com, joins us. A lot of people wondered why Grubauer re-signed in Washington last year rather than, you know, see what was out there. But here he is, and I don't know if he was reading the tea leaves, but Braden Holtby's struggling. The numbers are not good in favor of Holtby at all so far. And, you know, some are wondering, could they sit him come playoff time? What do you see going on in Washington, and what do you see not working in Holtby's game?
Well, first of all, in terms of Grubauer, I mean, he was an RFA, so he couldn't have just walked. And certainly the Capitals would have, you know, I don't think it was a secret, they would have preferred to actually lose him in the expansion draft versus losing Nate Schmidt. But that said, you're right. Take a look right now, and the way things have gone for Braden this year, and very uncharacteristically so, down around 906, well, Grubauer is, you know, top 10 in the league at 923, one of the hottest goalies in the NHL over his past 20 starts, and, you know, 13 wins for a team that, you know, solidly in the playoffs, but they don't have a huge cushion. Obviously, they needed him this season, so in retrospect, probably glad they didn't lose him. It's really tough to pin down with Holtby what's going on there. We have seen, you know, we've talked in the past about what changes in personnel can mean, and that's a team that lost a lot on the back end, and yet it hasn't negatively impacted Grubauer in the same way. The one thing I would say about Braden's game is it's heavily skill-based, and his skill level is exceptional. I mean, I got a chance to be on the ice with him and see it firsthand this summer through some of the training and some of the different options he was looking at in his training this summer. And he really does play sort of out of his periphery and relies a lot on sort of reads. And there are some, you know, some technical exposures there as a result. And what I can't tell you, because those technical exposures have been there throughout, and he's been one of the best in the league throughout. So what's changed? Is he caught in between a little bit, maybe trying to institute some of those changes, recognizing that he's going to need them long term? Sometimes as a goaltender, it's better to be all in on the wrong thing than it is to be in between trying to learn something new, and there may be a little bit of growing pains there with him. It could be a little bit of just fatigue in terms of the amount of workload he's had, and we've seen this year that, you know, a lot of number one goalies have kind of hit that proverbial wall, but it has left the Capitals with some interesting questions down the stretch. I mean, the smart money says that they give him this time off, and they've given him, like, at one point a 10-day break here. Now, slowly build him back up and get him up and running up to the level you know he's capable of heading into the playoffs, and he's your guy. But when the gap is that big between the save percentages and 906 to 923 over that large a sample is nothing to sneeze at, certainly at least the possibility that we see a Philip Grubauer in the playoffs for the Washington Capitals exists.
Kevin Woodley from Ingo Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Now, Alex Leon, the Flyers, man. I know, Kevin, you've been one who's long said, hey, Mrazek, excellent athlete as a goaltender, but can be very inconsistent. He got hot and then couldn't make a save, really, and Philly went to the rookie. Do you think they might have to go with the youngster instead of Mrazek down the stretch and in the playoffs?
It's going to be interesting. I mean, certainly, I think Brian Elliott is. I mean, I think he's a possibility as we head towards the playoffs. Like, I don't think this is a long-term thing here, but I do find it interesting you know, that at a time when a lot of people saw Mrazek as a slam dunk acquisition, and when he got off to a hot start, I mean, hey, he's had hot fits before. You know, I was kind of sitting there going, just wait. And sure enough, the reliance on that athleticism, the over-reliance on it for Mrazek has kind of, you know, once again caught up to him from a consistency perspective. And you know, short-term, I think they get their number one guy in Elliott back in time for the playoffs. But it is interesting to note that, you know, this guy who was brought in with all this experience, who, you know, not that long ago was considered the future number one in Detroit, now with another organization is having the same problems. And, you know, if you're Peter Mrazek and if your team's looking at him as an option in the future this summer, I would suggest that you probably, you know, cool off a little bit to, you know, not necessarily his upside overall, because I still think it's there, but just what he is as a goaltender. I think the sample, there's been more consistency over the past couple of years, and maybe some of the shine of his early career brilliance has worn off. In terms of the short term, they just need a save, and I think you could see them go back and forth a little bit here until they find a guy who gets on a hot streak, and maybe it is Mrazek. Maybe he does find his rhythm for a couple of games, but in the meantime, if you're the Flyers and, you know, you're in that kind of that dogfight. I mean, they're safe in terms of a 6-point cushion on the playoffs, but you know, just a real battle there in the Metropolitan for that third spot, or whether you end up in a wild card and facing Tampa Bay in the first round. You kind of, as an organization that's basically got three NHL goaltenders invested with Elliott, Mrazek in the trade, and Michael Neuwirth, it's pretty interesting that a kid who's in his second pro year out of college is the guy they're turning to right now.
Kevin, we can't be surprised that Bishop got injured again. That was kind of the one concern with Dallas, is that he has a history of injuries. Like, 1 year's one thing. When it becomes 3-4 years, that becomes a problem, especially for goalies.
Yeah, and so I guess you kind of reap what you sow in Dallas right now. I know I've read a lot of stuff since I came back off, you know, came back off my trip overseas, and you know, I was surprised to see where the Stars were, to be honest with you, that they'd fallen that far out and that they were on this, you know, historic now, the longest losing streak after dropping one of the Canucks last night since they moved the franchise to Dallas. And that's, you know, at a time when they need to make the playoffs, and with the names of the lineup, everybody just pointing to, hey, they don't have Ben Bishop, and that's the guy they counted on down the stretch. And I get it. I get those sentiments. And yet, for the exact same reasons I said buyer beware in the summer when we talked about Ben Bishop, I don't see how you can be surprised, because he just has a history where staying healthy is a struggle. And, you know, I mean, it's a big body. And as the game has gotten more dynamic left to right, and the demands that puts on a big body, especially a guy who, you know, has never been technically efficient. I mean, he's a guy who relies a lot on sort of raw skill and athleticism, puts a lot of strain on those long limbs because of the way he opens up and the way he moves around the crease. There's not a lot of efficiency there, frankly. And it does put a lot of stress on joints that over the past couple of years have proven they can't always handle it. And so you get to this point and you don't have them. And if you're surprised by it in Dallas, then I suggest you didn't do your homework before you made this investment in Ben Bishop. And this is year one in terms of a long-term investment. So, listen, he's still capable as a number one goaltender, obviously a big part of where they got to before this drop-off. But I'd suggest they make sure they've got a good number two behind him. And you know, this is not all on Kari Lehtinen, because I thought he's been pretty good this year up until this run. But you need to have a good insurance policy, because I really don't think you can count on Ben Bishop to be, you know, he's not going to be a 65 start guy anymore. And pushing him too much is going to lead to situations like this where you're short and you're missing him down the stretch, because he really does. I mean, it's just not a secret at this point. He struggles to stay healthy.
Kevin Woodley and Gold Magazine, NHL.com. Join us. One last one for you, Kevin. I know Stephen Valiquette, they've got their private analytics company, and you know, they adjust the save percentage stuff, and they put it into, you know, they take every scoring chance. right? Where it comes from, all those sorts of things. There's a lot of stuff. Now, it's not public, but I know you got the numbers. You had Crawford number one. That doesn't really surprise me. Ranta, Vasilevsky, Anderson in Toronto. That didn't surprise me at all. And then, but Jones for the San Jose Sharks, whose overall numbers just really aren't that good. Right, when you look at his save percentage overall, like he's 22nd at even strength save percentage amongst goalies, and then just in overall save percentage amongst, and I'm talking goalies who start a lot of games, right? Like he's near the bottom. So what do you make of that? Is San Jose really, like, when they give up chances, they're all massive grade A chances?
You know, it's funny because to me that was the one that jumped out as well. I mean, I think Freddie Anderson and Andre Vasilevsky, who I think right now are kind of mid-pack, what, like 12 and 15 in terms of overall save percentage, having them jump to 3 and 4 wasn't as big a surprise, because I think if we watched them, we saw how heavily Tampa Bay leaned on Vasilevsky. I mean, when they came through town here, the scoring chances he faced were really high-end. And Freddie Anderson, it's a combination of volume and quality in Toronto. Clearly, they've leaned on him. So seeing those guys move so far up, not a huge shock. But Jones, you're right. I think the perception around the league, and I'm as guilty of this as anyone, was that the Sharks were a good defensive team, and that, you know, here he was, he almost seemed like plodding along with another just above NHL average save percentage. So to see the adjusted numbers jump this high, it's usually a combination of quantity but also quality. And then when I started tracking goals, because I'm getting started on the annual sort of playoff project where NHL.com pays me to basically break down every goal that every playoff goalie gives up and come up with a scouting report, I started going through Jones, and I was into December and January and just shaking my head at the amount of backdoor tap-in type goals that this guy was facing. And yeah, there is a tendency in his game at times, especially moving to his blocker side, to maybe overcommit a little bit, maybe sort of get off angle and slide outside of his post, and that leaves him obviously more vulnerable to that tap-in on the other side. But for the most part, I mean, it was tic-tac-toe around the defensive zone, and things seemed to get a little better as the season went on. But overall, I do think this is one of those cases where you adjust for quality, and Martin Jones is a lot better than the raw numbers you just mentioned probably indicate. And on the other end of the spectrum, Pekka Rinne, who is, you know, probably a slam dunk for the Vezina Trophy, and deservedly so, because he's had a remarkable season. And I give him a lot of credit. We've talked about age 35 and still evolving and changing his game to get better. But when you actually adjust some of his numbers, I mean, they didn't publish this, but I poked around and asked, and they shared it with me. He's 12th in the NHL among regular starters in terms of adjusted save percentage. So there's a case where, you know, the shot quality that he's seeing in Nashville, and I think anecdotally, despite the fact that they're a high-octane team that can trade chances at times, I think when you look at the personnel and you see that defense core, you'd probably guess that maybe the shot quality isn't quite as high. And certainly from those numbers from Valakat's group, from Clearside Analytics, that would indicate the same. So, again, doesn't change my opinion that he's going to win the Vezina Trophy. I mean, he'd have to collapse pretty hard here in the last couple of weeks. But I think, you know, as we start to look deeper and deeper into these numbers, and, you know, Clearsight uses 34 points of data for every shot they record. You know, we start to see that sometimes the surface story doesn't necessarily match what's underneath. And I've always talked about goaltending, that it doesn't exist in a vacuum. And that vacuum being defensive team play. When we start to peel back some of those layers and look, how we view some of these goalies, like a Martin Jones, might change.
Kev, good stuff, man. Next week, we'll be down to probably a few more teams out of it, and we will see if any of the goalies have a good or bad week. We appreciate it.
Hopefully by next week, I'm a little less jet-lagged, too. Thanks for putting up with me today, Jason.